Hello, my name is Harvey D'Souza, Principal First Violin with the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields. Welcome to another edition of the Academy podcast. Throughout this series, we will speak to some of the world's great musicians examining the repertoire at the heart of this much-loved chamber orchestra's yearly schedule. In this episode, we talk in depth with the Academy's music director, the internationally renowned violinist Joshua Bell.
I wasn't sure doing the Tchaikovsky concerto was going to be possible without a conductor, and now after doing it, rehearsing it with the orchestra, it's the ideal way to do it.
Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto will be part of the repertoire the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields will be touring to the United States in March 2016. Podcaster Ben Eshmade sat down with Joshua after his first rehearsal of the concerto with the Academy to talk about his work as music director and to find out why Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto is one of the most loved pieces in the violin repertoire.
What does it mean to you to be musical director of the Academy at this stage in your career?
This is really, my work with the Academy is really the what I look forward to most now in my schedule, my kind of crazy schedule. I do a lot of things, a lot of chamber music and recitals and concertos with orchestras, but really coming to it's almost like family now with the Academy. It really came along at just the right time in my career because I was looking for something, sort of a way to expand my repertoire and start exploring new things. And this has just been a sort of a dream come true, you know, getting to do the Beethoven symphonies and direct now this, you know, Tchaikovsky concerto from the violin in a way that I've, you know, a piece I've done 1,000 times before, but now breathes new life into a piece like that. I'm so excited about it.
Did you say yes straight away? Was there any doubt in your mind?
Oh no, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind. It's been a very organic relationship. I mean, starting with my first experience with them, just turned 19, with Sir Neville Mariner. I don't even think he was a sir yet at that point. But then in the last, really over the last decade or so, even more actually, I've been coming back. I got to know them very well, and it feels very organic. So when they suggested the idea of formalizing the role, it was just a no-brainer.
How do you see the role sort of developing over time?
Well, you know, I'm becoming more and more comfortable in the role, and the repertoire keeps expanding. You know, for me, you know, it started with small or string pieces, and then slightly larger symphonies, and then Beethoven symphonies. Now we're expanding. I mean, I wasn't sure doing the Tchaikovsky concerto was going to be possible without a conductor, and now after doing it, rehearsing it with the orchestra, it's the ideal way to do it. And next year we're talking about doing Brahms and Schumann symphonies, and I don't know if Mahler or Shostakovich is in the works, but you know, but we'll see. Yeah, so from my end, I hope it goes on as long as possible.
Before you started this role, had you had much experience of sort of play directing symphonic repertoire?
Not so much. I've done a lot of chamber music, so really it's similar. I approach the symphonies like chamber music, but I'm learning, you know, the language of how to convey with the violin in my hand, that's feeling more and more natural. And after doing this with some other orchestras, I've been conducting some Beethoven symphonies without the violin at all and just directing. And that's thanks to my work with the Academy that I feel comfortable enough to now get in front of orchestras and just conduct.
I was trying to draw a parallel, and you may have a different one. One idea was the idea of being an actor in the movie that you're directing, if that makes sense.
Well, certainly that's just the cliche about the actors wanting to direct. But I think, you know, after an actor has done Hamlet so many times, I think after a while the actor gets to have an idea of how he wishes the whole thing were done, and wants to, not surprising that an actor would want to become a director. And the same thing with, you know, violin soloist or pianist. It's very common that as you get older, you want, I don't want to be a cliche, but it's, you know, but it is something that seemed right for me. You know, even when I was playing, conductors have often told me, saying, you know, maybe you should just do it. You're leading so much, and they seem to be following what you're doing, because I tend sometimes overstep my bounds when I have a conductor in how I lead. So and all the histrionics and my violin playing that people have criticized me for are now suddenly becoming in handy because the gestures that I make it easier for an orchestra to follow me. So it seemed like just up my alley, I think.
Thank you.
on an Academy tour, you're often out for a whole month playing these huge symphonic programs. Is that kind of a very different experience to touring as just a soloist?
Well, when I'm not touring with this orchestra, if I'm just going from place to place, it's usually a couple days here, a couple days there, I'll come home in between. And you have to start fresh with a new orchestra and explain what you want to do. And there's something wonderful about a tour because you get to do it so many times and you get to refine it from concert to concert. But it build each concert sort of builds on what you've learned from the time before. And also, it's a camaraderie. You know, you go on the road, you go out to eat with your friends in the orchestra afterwards, and you get to know them better. And when you know them personally, it makes music making more intimate as well. So
I was going to ask about how you recharge your batteries. I mean, it's an exhausting experience. I mean, is it food? Is it TV? Is it books? is it quiet?
Well, recharge. You know, it's hard to say what recharges my batteries. I'm not sure if they need recharging or just sometimes it's just getting my mind off of music. And that's for me, American football. We're smack in the middle of football season right now, so I...
Who do you support?
Well, I'm Indianapolis Colts fan, but I follow all of the games and even place a wager here and there on various games. And when I'm in Europe, I have various subscriptions to ways I can watch all the games at 5 in the morning over here. So that's something you might find me doing. Watching some TV shows, on our bus tours or whatever, I'll be watching some Breaking Bad or Game of Thrones and occasionally reading too, although that's now that I have a computer with me, I'm doing less and less reading than I used to. And of course, when I'm at home, I have three boys, I have three kids, which it makes it harder and harder to go on these long tours. I try to get home, even if it's just for a couple of days.
When you compare the first night of a tour to the last, has the ensemble's performance changed and developed? And even, you know, your relationship to the music?
Yeah, unfortunately, there's no way to avoid a first performance. You have to do it to get to the second. And actually, usually we feel good after the first performance. It's just after the last performance, after 20 of them, we think, oh my God, what were, you know, it's much better now than it was in the beginning. But it's a nice thing. After 10 performances, everything becomes more organic. What I love about this orchestra, they always try to strive to get it better, and they don't seem to mind before each concert kind of going over things and trying to get it better. I've had experiences with other orchestras, I have to say, with some very big orchestras, major orchestras on tour, where they really resent working after you've started the first it's almost like a union rule. It's like, once you start played a concert, you shouldn't be rehearsing us anymore, you know. Wow. And that's anti-musical as far as I'm concerned, and I don't never get that feeling from the Academy.
You're best known to most of your fellow Americans as an incredible soloist. It must be special for you to bring this orchestra back to perform in front of your home audience.
Well, certainly, yeah. I'm very proud of my relationship with this orchestra. I'm proud of this orchestra and how well they play. You know, I love bringing this orchestra to major cities where they have their big orchestras, and bringing this orchestra and have some people say, you know, we haven't heard an orchestra play with that kind of energy in a while. And it's always nice to hear that, to show them off in that way. So yeah, it's wonderful to bring them to the States, and can't wait for the spring.
Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto is widely regarded as one of the greatest concertos ever written. Completed in a tumultuous period in Tchaikovsky's life, which included a sham marriage and a suicide attempt, it was also a period when he completed many of his greatest works, including the powerful Symphony No. 4 and the opera Eugene Onegin. But to say the Violin Concerto got off to an inauspicious start is putting it mildly. Written in 1878, the premiere was delayed for 3 years, with Tchaikovsky's desired soloist, Leopold Auer, labeling it unplayable. When the concerto finally did receive its premiere in 1881, it was a total catastrophe. Influential music critic at that time, Edward Hanslick, denounced the work as trivial, barbarous Cossack music, saying it was music that we can actually hear stink. With the concerto apparently destined for the classical music graveyard, it was the Czech violinist Karel Harlier that championed the work in the years that followed, ensuring it eventually assumed its place as an audience favorite. Let's return to Ben Eshmaid and Joshua Bell.
The concerto is extremely popular. What do you think draws audiences worldwide to this piece?
Well, the Tchaikovsky's got everything. It's very beautiful. It's very exciting. It's very difficult and shows off the violin in a wonderful way. It shows off the orchestra. And there really is no more viscerally exciting piece for the violin. Now, I have done it so many times, and I've recorded it twice, once with the Cleveland Orchestra and Ashkenazi, and then once with the Berlin Philharmonic and Tilson Thomas, many years apart. And it's a piece that I've evolved with. It's so nice now with this orchestra to be able to ask for all the little details that I couldn't really do when I played with the conductor. I could pick and choose a few things, you know, I had to choose my battles. But here I'm sort of in charge, and I can just, I've already, you know, after rehearsing with him, heard things in the Tchaikovsky that I've never heard before, that I always wanted to hear. And it's so exciting.
Do you have memories of when you like first put the sheet music up in front of you and you started to try to get your fingers around the melodies and the rhythms and this piece?
Very distant, vague memories of not knowing this piece. Summer camp at the age of 13, I do remember bringing it with me to summer camp, and it was called Meadow Mount, and studying my teacher Joseph Gingold, and I had a teacher there at the summer camp that gave me his fingerings, and I was trying to incorporate all these fingerings. I've sort of abandoned that and done, you know, kind of went off on my own soon after that. But yeah, you know, and then I probably recorded it just maybe 5 or 6 years later for the first time with the Cleveland Orchestra. Funny to think of it that way.
Is it a conversation between you and the ensemble?
Yes, I mean, music is always a conversation. Even solo Bach is a conversation with oneself. So yes, there's so much back and forth, handing over melodies between the winds and the strings and the winds, or me and the first violins, back and forth. There's constant conversation, and that's why violin soloists should not think of themselves as a soloist and stand up there and hope the orchestra follows. It's constant back and forth, and sometimes the solo violin does not even have the lead, you know, the lead role. And you have to think of it like a piece of chamber music.
Do you feel a certain sense of ownership, because you've obviously recorded it twice, so it's obviously a piece that's got a certain amount of association with you?
Well, yeah, you have to feel like you have a kind of ownership of any of these pieces. You have to just make it your own and feel like this is the way it has to be done. So yes, you know, and some people will like it, some people won't, but that's not the way I'm thinking. I that is part of me, and with a piece like this, it does feel that way. And the more you know it, actually, the more you feel you can then let go of it in the concert and just improvise, not literally improvise the notes, but improvise because you know it so well. You can then let it affect you in the moment in new ways. Violin keeps playing. I mean, from the cadenza to the end of the piece, which is probably a good 10-minute stretch, there's not a single break for the violin. So that's quite demanding. You have to be in good shape and well rested before you play this piece.
Do you listen to your previous recordings? Do you listen to other recordings?
Actually, at this point, I do not. I do not listen to my recordings, for sure. That's painful. And at this point, I won't listen to other recordings, just because I don't want to. I mean, I would be inspired, I'm sure, to listen to other recordings. It might actually give me an idea here and there. And occasionally, I'll go hear a friend play a piece like this, generally, maybe Haif fits every once in a while. Just he inspires me when I listen to just his approach to the instrument.
This morning you were play directing the Tchaikovsky for the first time. What was that like? I mean, did it go well?
I wasn't sure how it was going to go, and it went much more smoothly than I thought it would. Many of the problems that are usually there with conductor and large orchestra were not there at all, and in some ways it felt more organic and more natural than it's ever before. So I was very, very pleased, and I was just excited to work on some details and try out some things that I'd never been able to try out.
You've experimented writing your own cadenzas for other concertos. Mm-hmm. Is this something you would ever consider trying with Tchaikovsky?
You know, I have thought about it. I haven't done it. It is so hard to think of the Tchaikovsky with any other cadenza, and Tchaikovsky wrote his own. But, it's not totally out of the question. I did it for the Mendelssohn Concerto, where Mendelssohn wrote his own, and I did replace that cadenza with my own in the Mendelssohn. So maybe someday in Tchaikovsky, but I haven't done it yet.
To finish with, I mean, what draws you back to this concerto again and again? I mean, why should we care so passionately about this work? Because obviously you do.
Well, people keep asking for it, so I keep playing. No, it's a classic. It's like a great Shakespeare play or a Tolstoy novel, or it's going to be there, it's going to be in the repertoire, and people should hear it regularly, because it's one of the handful of pieces that speak to everyone and will always speak to them. So it deserves to be played and to be continued to be played.
My name is Harvey D'Souza, and I am principal first violin of the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields. You've been listening to an Academy of St. Martin in the Fields podcast. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, we'd love to hear your thoughts and feedback, so please do get in touch with us via our official Facebook page or on Twitter at ASMF Orchestra using the hashtag ASMF Podcast. You can catch Joshua Bell and the Academy performing Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto in Reading in the UK, or in one of the 14 performances throughout the United States of America. If you wish to book tickets for these concerts, find out more about the Academy, or support our work by joining the Academy, friends, please visit asmf.org. Thanks for listening.